I'm right now at the Polk County Convention Center, which is in the center of Des Moines, Iowa, and we're covering the Iowa caucuses. We have been recruiting in Iowa since our inception, which was this summer. You know, July, August is when the uptake started operations. So we've recruited a group of native Iowans who are capturing their experiences as the campaign trail comes to them, and then are also going to be capturing their experiences at caucuses today. In terms of, you know, planning, it was really difficult because Iowans, you know, aren't the most outgoing people, so it wasn't patently obvious where or how to capture real Iowans, especially being a new media outlet. There's not that instant sense of trust. It's like, oh, I'm with the Uptake. Who? You know, as opposed to saying, oh, I'm with the New York Times. Oh, I'm with the BBC. That gives you a much bigger ability to break through that trust barrier fast. Our advantage is our speed and our flexibility in unfiltered content that we provide. So there's pros and cons to being new media, and that's one of the reasons why we're devoting so many resources to Iowa, is to establish our brand as trusted, as somebody real people can talk to and get their voice heard in an unfiltered way.
And you said all the resources to Iowa. How many and how much is that where resources are concerned?
Well, you know, let's break it out into money, which is not a lot. I mean, this entire thing is under $600 for us, and which is basically nothing, because a lot of that is just getting wireless access keys. You know, being able to access the internet in Des Moines is the majority of our budget. Everything else is, you know, people who are involved in the Uptake chipping in, you know, to help the thing continue to run. You know, we're in the black as an organization, which is great, but none of us are paid. You know, we all have day jobs. So money is basically run on blood, sweat, and tears. In terms of manpower, we have a group of four separate Iowans who have been, four to five, depending upon the week. Right now it's four Iowans working here, documenting their experiences as, you know, Uptake correspondents. And then we sent down a group of four from Minnesota, and then we had our Colorado correspondent come in as well.
What happens at the beginning of a day? Do you just say to your correspondents, go out and just find some Iowans somewhere and give me something interesting, or do they have their own ideas? Or
yeah, it's mainly the editorial process right now is heavily community driven, so it's less a bird's eye view, and we're saying, oh, there's this great event over here, go do it. It's more, oh, what were you planning to do anyway? Oh, are you planning on bringing your camera? So, you know, if anything, right now with our community here in Iowa, it's a mere gentle push of, oh, that'd be probably a good thing to bring your camera too. But where they're going is almost exclusively their own jurisdiction, and they know much better than we could about what might be relevant on film.
Which
editorially, we have our core group, which has been trying to get, you know, a 70-30, 80-20 mix of wherever the media goes, we go in the opposite direction, and then we have a 20% sprinkling of the traditional candidate talking stump speech just to sort of establish, yes, we're here.
And what have you found? You know, we chatted earlier by virtue of various postings on the comments section of the Newscut, but what have you found regarding how the media, that would be Big M, covers things versus how you can cover things?
Well, you know, I mean, I think that's the first key term is how we can cover things. You know, there's how we'd like to cover things, and then there's how we're finding our ability stands. And, you know, in that initial post from Corinne, you know, showing the juxtaposition between the two media rooms, you know, we saw the analogy instantly is that there's sort of a co-construction going on, is that, you know, the media wants to get at the real story, but they structure themselves in a way that puts them away from the real story, from the real Iowans. The campaign nominally wants the media to speak to real Iowans, but utterly and completely locks down anyone that's even nominally involved with their campaign. Volunteers here are actually credentialed. They have volunteer badges. So you know who they are, but if you try to talk to them, they will not talk to you. They have already been indoctrinated to not talk to any media whatsoever for any condition. And so there's a co-construction between the campaigns and the media that makes it very difficult to cover that real Iowan vibe. Anyone who's not already been locked down by the campaigns isn't very interested in politics anyway and doesn't want to talk to you. I mean, there's things we're doing today to try to get around those roadblocks, and we'll see how successful it is.
When I've gone off to the national conventions, I posted something on this a little while ago. The thing that always kind of creeped me out, though, was how staged everything is and what actors the delegates are. This is at the national convention level.
Yeah.
The actors are, and how willing media is, I guess, to go along with that sort of thing, you know? And I always said the real story really isn't in auditoriums and conventions. It's out somewhere else, you know, like wherever that is. And you referred a little while ago to what the real story is. Well, what is the real story in Iowa that you'd like to get at?
The real story in Iowa, that is the question. And that's something that, you know, emerging as we're here and as we're gathering video, we're going to do a wrap-up piece on Friday to kind of present, you know, our working theory. My personal theory is, I mean, from what I've seen so far, and again, this is also biased, and I just want to make sure that that's out there. This is biased because I also went to the 2004 Democratic National Convention
Sure. And
saw the Kabuki Theater going on, and I see a lot of parallels, even at this first level of the process of the Iowa caucuses, is that increasingly this is less about emergent democracy. It's not emergent democracy. It's not Kabuki Theater, maybe it's not the approach, but it's puppet theater in the sense of you have campaigns that are devoting, you know, incredibly strong resources to placing people, you know, in groups and moving them around. I mean, in political circles, I used to work on the other side of the aisle, actually, in electoral campaigns, you know, the term is herding cats. It is, you know, you have a group of people that you need to move into very defined pens who don't want to be defined, but that's what the process is, and that's what the process calls for. And, you know, like water flowing into a vessel, it has to form an exact shape. There are very few sort of events that try to break out of that mold. There are things that are going around the Republican National Convention later this year, you know, alternate caucuses of the future, as they're being labeled, that try to break out of the mold, and we'll definitely be covering those. But this seems to be even more so an extension of that, because this is the first time I've seen, in both participating and covering politics, I've seen volunteers with official credentials, every volunteer holding an official credential. And that seems to me totally counterintuitive, because why are you notifying the media that they're a volunteer if we can't speak to them?
Right.
And so it's almost like, you know, a demarcation of the boundary. It's you know, the delicious dessert behind plate glass. I really don't know what the campaigns were thinking, and it is across the board. It's not, you know, a Hillary thing. You know, every campaign that we've encountered so far has been doing it.
I saw the one piece this morning. I'm just going to play devil's advocate with you, if that's
Please.
Okay. I saw
Yeah.
the one piece this morning that one of your citizen journalists, I guess, shot regarding there was a protest in the Obama headquarters or whatever it was, storefront, whatever, on the Iraq War. And I guess it was a camera crew from somewhere came with the assignment to shoot video of phone bank workers, I guess, you know, and
right.
The suggestion was made that because the camera person didn't give a rip, I guess, about the protest, he just wanted to shoot pictures of the phone bankers, that was somehow symbolic of what mainstream media and how they cover this. And I think the question to them was, you know, don't you care about dead people in Iraq? But on the other hand, these are just camera people, you know, they weren't the editors or the assignment editors or the people who are giving the instructions. So, you know, that to a degree, I guess that's why I ask about the editorial process in this sort of thing. Is that what you shoot for? I mean, how do you empower citizens to tell stories and have them still be stories, accurate stories or proper pictures of what's going on, if you know what
sure.
I mean.
I mean, with that one, I was not the editor on that piece, so I can't speak directly to it. But, you know, what I'm familiar with, you know, we decided that was, while certainly subjective, it was certainly, you know, a valid viewpoint. It happened. It was an actual event. And it also encapsulated a lot of the opinions we're seeing out there through are not like volunteers that aren't active on video, but also, you know, in the blogosphere on the reactions toward MEDA and the reactions specifically to the Obama campaign. So it co-encapsulated, one, the progressive reaction to MEDA. You know, true or not, these people are reacting to MEDA as if that's how they're behaving.
Sure.
And that's important to showcase. But also the reaction to Obama, you know, on his perceived, real or not, move to the center as the campaign has come to a close after the last 3 weeks. And so this made that was, you know, that passed the editorial stuff, you know, of the uptake. And I think where I want to go with this, you know, where I think, you know, what we're building in the background is moving toward is the idea of a conversation that, you know, when a piece like that goes up, it's easy, technologically speaking, to respond to that, whether through print or through an alternative video, so people see this entire spectrum of conversation. And actually, we have an interview with Steve Grove, which is coming up today, who's head of news and politics at YouTube, about what YouTube is also doing to, instead of having this huge stream of pluripotent single viewpoints, and sometimes they're incorporated into kind of a more cogent discussion, you know, conversation with opposing viewpoints and rational analysis, but often there's just so much that you just get a whole bunch of single viewpoints without any coherence to it. Steps they're taking so people can see conversations and not rants. You know, that's obviously what the blogosphere needs to do in order to, you know, evolve to its next level and obtain its next market share, is to move past the rant and into a conversation. I mean, that's what I think a basic fundamental large democracy.
So the conversation, for instance, again, taking this piece as an example, the conversation that springs from that is every bit as part of the story as the piece itself.
Absolutely. Like, in that case, my ideal, like in my ideal media world, you know, a citizen journalist who could, you know, people who work for mainstream media, for legacy media, are citizens as well, right? It's how they commit that act of journalism that defines the label. But, you know, or maybe that guy specifically, or someone who works in the field, responds to the videos like, well, here, this is the part you're not seeing about, you know, how we get our assignments, or you know, how we achieve balance, or, you know, why he was doing that thing. And, you know, that comes up where, you know, you click on that original video and you see in the sidebar, oh, here's this, you know, very topical response. Now you can see this response and you get this, you know, not counterpoint for the sake of counterpoint, but an evolving, emergent conversation from the community.
Sure. And the fact that I'm even talking about it shows the value, I guess, that it has.
Right. Somebody responded.
Yeah,
it's like I haven't watched the video details to know where that media team was from, but somebody in, you know, a very august media organization, you know, had a reaction to it, and now we're talking to them about it. And so this is, you know, this is pretty closely matching what my ideal is,
sure,
as it stands. So I think it's great.
So what are people going to see tonight when they click on the uptake site?
Oh, man. We've been talking to people as much as we can at a couple different events, Obama, Edwards, Clinton, and Ron Paul, and those pieces, if not, they're already up in rotation or about to be. We have producers working on them. We have Chuck is, you know, a big part of Obama's lead in the polls is based on Republicans or nominal independents. And what we haven't seen personally is, well, okay, yes, maybe his rhetoric's a little bit lower than, say, Edwards, but why are Republicans or independents supporting him? So Chuck's going to, has made some contacts and is really going into the meat of this. I think the principal person we're talking to is she's a Republican and she owns a couple of gas stations, but she's an Obama supporter. And we're going to try to really get into the meta of, you know, why Obama could be the first in quite some time, as far as I can see, crossover candidate. So that's one thing. Our other correspondent, who's also named Chuck, is going to be heading out to some local restaurants and try to talk to some people that aren't necessarily part of the political process, but at least want to talk to the media about maybe, you know, why they're not part of the political process or, you know, how they identify themselves politically in this supercharged political atmosphere. You know, it's sort of like, in this atmosphere, unless you are pledged to a candidate and you're going to be at the caucus and you're going to caucus for them, it's like you don't have any political identity, but things aren't that polarized. You know, it's a spectrum. And then, oh man, I'm trying to remember our entire coverage schedule here, in addition to my own. You know, I have to. I can email
sure.
you the
yeah,
rest
that's
of
fine.
It.
Yeah, that's fine.
My brain, my external memory is failing right
what
now.
What do you suppose? I don't know how long you've been down there now for, or how long you intend to stay. But what do you suppose it's going to be like around there, like on Saturday morning, to be an Iowan on Saturday morning when nobody loves you anymore?
I think the vibe I've gotten from Ireland, it's going to be great. I mean, because it's, if anything, like, and not to talk down my own media people, but if anything, it's sort of an eyesore. I haven't seen that much disruption, like physical, logistical disruption to the average Iowan daily life. I mean, really the only difference you can just walk around Iowa that anything's even happening is that every other block there might be a bunch of satellite trucks. And so, I mean, there's maybe going to be a bit of a visual difference, but I don't think this is how the majority of Iowans identify themselves, how they internalize their own importance in the world. And so I think once the Iowa caucuses are done, you know, there's going to be a couple more parking spaces for meters. But, you know, that's about it. I think they are pretty calm with the process. That being said, you know, for the media getting yanked immediately to New Hampshire, it's going to spin their heads. I mean, we're thinking about going over to Gary Hart's house and egging it. You know, we're so fed up with this process. And I mean, that's one story we're trying to cover. I don't know how successful we're going to be able to do it. It's talk to the media about, has this process made you more cynical about politics? I mean, I was talking to an unnamed reporter from NPR the other night, and he, you know, he said almost verbatim, was like, if I hear this dump speech one more time, my face is going to melt off. And so as hard as it is for the media to cover that same stump speech again and again and again and somehow make it relevant, you know how difficult it is for the candidate. Like, they are human. And, I mean, you see the Robert Redford movie, you know, The Candidate. That must be what's happening. The candidates must go behind the scenes and at some point just break down and, like, laugh themselves silly, because I don't see how any human could do what they're doing and not have an outlet like that.